ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're continuing our reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Canto 7, Chapter 3. Today's text is 18, yes? 18 on the board. Okay. Adraksham Aham Etam Te Hritsaram Mahat Adbhutam Dangsha Pakshita Dehasya Prana Hi Ashtishu Sherate Adraksham Ahametang Te Hritsaram Mahadadbhutam Dangsha Bhakshita Dehasya Prana Hyastishu Sherate Adraksham ahametang te Hritsarang mahat adbhutam Dangsha bakshita dehasya Prana hyastishu sherate Adraksham ahametang te Hritsarang mahat adbhutam Dangsha bakshita dehasya Prana hyastishu sherate Please chant. Adraksham ahametang te Hritsarang maharadbhutam Dangsha bakshita dehasya Prana hyastishu sherate Vaishnavis. Adraksham ahametang te. Hritsarang mahat adbhutam Okay, synonyms. Adraksham, have personally seen. Aham, I. Etam, this. Te, your. Hritsaram, power of endurance. Mahat, very great. Adbhutam, wonderful. Dangsha bakshita, eaten by worms and ants. Dehasya. Whose body? Pranaha. The life air. He. Indeed. Astishu. In the bones. Sherate. Is taking shelter. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. Lord Rama is speaking. I have been very much astonished to see your endurance. In spite of being eaten and bitten by all kinds of worms and ants, you are keeping your life air circulating within your bones. Certainly, this is wonderful. Please repeat. I have been very much astonished to see your endurance. In spite of being eaten and bitten by all kinds of worms and ants, you are keeping your life air circulating within your bones. Certainly, this is wonderful. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It appears that the soul can exist even through the bones, as shown by the personal example of Hiranyakashipu. When great yogis are in samadhi, even when their bodies are buried and their skin, marrow, blood, and so on have all been eaten, if only their bones remain, they can exist in a transcendental position. Very recently, an archaeologist published findings indicating that Lord Christ, after being buried, was exhumed and that he then went to Kashmir. There have been many actual examples of yogis being buried in trance and exhumed, alive and in good condition, several hours later. A yogi can keep himself alive in a transcendental state, even if buried, not only for many days, but for many years. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacadeshtarine Om Agyana Timirandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtang Stapitang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Tapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tangsajivam Chadvaitam Savadutam Purjana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pradhan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitangsha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Pre, Vancha Kopatrubya Shah, Kripasinubi Evacha Patitanang, Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dittananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari, Gaur Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So is this a useful platform to attain? To be able to maintain your life airs just with the bones? It is if you're a frog. In other words, there are frogs on this planet right now who can do this. They live in areas that go through severe drought. Sometimes for years, no water comes. So when the rainy season finally comes, they do everything. They come out of their hibernation, their samadhi. They eat, they mate, and then they go back into the mud while it's still soft. And then when the sun finally starts beating down relentlessly, then it becomes like caked, baked earth, and they stay there sometimes for years in a state of samadhi until the rains come again. So, on one hand, it's adbhuta, wonderful, that Hiranyakashipu can maintain his life airs just in the bones. But on the other hand, it's like, so what? Frogs can do that. Frogs can do that too. So, this is indicative of the fact that any material perfection that you achieve in the long run, it's like frog perfection. It's really not such a big deal. The real perfection that we're meant to achieve as human beings that Hiranyakashipu is missing the whole point of is to come back to the point of reawakening our love for God. He's not performing his austerities for that purpose. He's conscious of the fact that there are higher powers, more powerful beings than himself. But he doesn't want to submit to the higher power. He wants to use the higher power for his own benefit, for his own aggrandizement. So this is demoniac. This is the demoniac nature. Whomever I meet, whatever situation I'm in, whatever I see, I want to use for my purpose. User mentality. And if we have a user mentality, it usually transforms into abusive mentality. Because you're dealing ultimately with other living entities who generally don't like to be used. Think of it. Do you like to be used? Anybody here? As soon as we feel ourselves in a situation where we're being used, I want out of here. I don't want anything to do with that. The reason why many, if not most of us, if not all of us, were attracted to Srila Prabhupada is because we finally met a personality with whom we could have a relationship in which we did not feel used at all. We quickly came to the understanding that it was a privilege, a great, great privilege, to submit ourselves to be used by Srila Prabhupada. If he would agree to use us in some way, that was our great privilege. With such a personality, it's very rare, because generally speaking, again, when you're dealing with another conditioned soul, you're dealing with somebody who's in the user mentality. They look, are always scanning the horizon for someone else to use for their own purposes. I want to use you to satisfy my senses, to get me my objects of sense gratification, to scratch my back, and okay, I'll scratch yours too, otherwise I know you won't stick around, but the basic underlying principle is we want to use each other. And we extend that mentality when we progress enough to understanding that there are higher beings and higher powers, then we want to use them too. And therefore Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that, you know, those who are worshipping the demigods, they're doing it for the wrong reason, and their fruits are going to be limited and temporary. As we know, this Vedic tradition coming out of ancient India, so there are many Indians that for them there's no question of believing or not believing. I mean, they grow up with this, they believe there's Vishnu, Krishna, Lakshmi, all these the real people. They're not just mythology as the Westerners tried to train them to think. When the British conquered India, they realized that they had come in contact with a civilization far superior to theirs, so they made a systematic attempt to degrade Indian Vedic culture. And their very intelligent approach was to take the intelligent Indians and train them in the Western mentality, Western Christian mentality, and then use them to tell the other Indians that this is just nonsense. This is all just mythology, and why do you believe all this stuff? It worked to a great extent. So, but there are many, even today, who still believe in the existence of Ganesh and Lakshmi, but they approach it again with this wrong mentality. I'm going to chant Ganesh mantras and Lakshmi mantras to gain material benefit. Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, if I can satisfy her by chanting her mantras, then surely she will benedict me with at least lakhs of rupees, if not crores of rupees. So still, so one can take to the Vedic path still for the wrong reason. So we have to progress to the point where we accept and strive for the highest level of human achievement, which is to reawaken our love for Krishna. And the science of bhakti, the whole bhakti process, is meant to do that. Why are we here? We always have to ask that individually and collectively. Why are we here? This Krishna consciousness movement is created to deliver that ultimate goal, to bring us back to the point of being 100% lovers of Krishna. We are motivated by love, but on the material platform that love is transformed into lust. And therefore, again, we have this user mentality. Because I have lusty desires that I want to fulfill, but I can't do it on my own. Therefore, I approach others to engage them in my service to fulfill or satisfy my lusty desires, which are never satiated. Never satiated, and just continue burning and blazing. To try to satisfy lust by sense gratification is like trying to put out a fire with gasoline. When you pour some gasoline on a fire, it seems to put it out. It kind of tamps down for a second, but because gasoline is fuel for the fire, then within an instant, it blazes up higher than it was previously. So the real way to extricate ourselves from this burning situation, samsara dhavanam alaloka, we chant every morning, that this material world is just like a blaze. Being in this material world is like being in a blazing forest fire. Annually, we experience forest fires here in the United States, right here in Los Angeles. Practically every year, Angeles National Forest is burning, this forest is burning, that forest is burning. And if one is trapped, it's an extremely dangerous situation. So one who's intelligent always feels, allows him or herself to feel the heat of material existence. In other words, don't try to get comfortable here. It's not the place to be comfortable. One has to allow oneself to feel the heat of material existence, and then we will have the impetus to get out of here. Otherwise, if we simply strive for comfort, we become so caught up in trying to be comfortable that we miss the boat. We don't see the exit. In the building code, everywhere, practically around the world, demands that you have clearly designated and marked exits from any building so that in case of emergency, people know exactly where to go. They don't have to question, where does this door go? You know, this is an exit, that is an exit. So similarly, there's an exit out of this forest fire. Last time Acharya Nartam gave class, he recited that verse, Mahatsevam Dwaram, Ahorma Bhuktes. The door to liberation is open when one agrees to serve the great souls, the Mahat, real Mahatmas. Not rubber-stamped Mahatmas, but real Mahatmas, because they've taken shelter. They're fully sheltered, always sheltered, under the lotus feet of Krishna. And therefore, anyone who takes shelter of them also becomes sheltered. Prabhupada used to say, you are mine. He told us, you are mine, and I am Krishna's, and therefore you are Krishna's also. And that's very instructive. It's not that we're trying to become Krishna's directly. That's impudence. Try to become the property of your spiritual master, and then you automatically become property of Krishna. So this love of Godhead that we're trying to achieve, there's a science for achieving it. And that science is clearly delineated in the Nectar of Devotion. It's such an important book for us to understand. So the basis, it's stated in the Nectar of Devotion, for this love of Godhead that we're trying to achieve or reawaken is called Vibhava. And that vibhav is divided into two parts, basic and impelling. So the basic cause for vibhav, or love of Godhead, is Krishna himself. Krishna is the basic force. Seems clear, or it should be clear, intuitive, that if you want to develop love for Krishna, then you have to concentrate on Krishna. You're not going to develop love for Krishna if you're concentrating on Jane or Joe or John or Jill. You want to develop love for Krishna, you have to concentrate on Krishna. You have to hear about Krishna, chant about Krishna, remember Krishna. So Krishna is the basic component of vibhava, which is the basis of love of Godhead. And then the impelling force is the pure devotee. So we have to concentrate on Krishna. Krishna is the goal. We're trying to achieve or reawaken our love for Krishna. But we also have to concentrate on the devotee of Krishna. Ideally, the spiritual master is that pure soul who impels us towards love of Krishna. That's the function of the guru. But like with anything that we do, there's a price to pay. If you want to be impelled back to Godhead, back to reawakening your love for Krishna by the guru, then one has to follow the instructions of the guru. One has to, as Prabhupada says, there is no questing of disciple without discipline. So if we want to be impelled by the guru back to Godhead, then we have to accept the discipline wholeheartedly, not grudgingly, not certainly not angrily or something like that. Well, you have to accept wholeheartedly. Again, keeping the mind and keeping your eye on the goal. If we really have the goal of reawakening our love of Godhead, then we will accept wholeheartedly the science of bhakti, which informs us, Rupa Goswami is informing us in this chapter, I think it's the 20th chapter, that if you want to reawaken your love for Krishna, you have to understand what is the basis of that love. And the basis of that love is called vibhav. And that vibhav is divided into two parts, the basic and the impelling. Krishna is the basis. The example given is of the Brahma Vimohana Leela, that after Lord Brahma stole the calves and coward boys, Krishna immediately expanded directly into all the different calves and coward boys. And for 1 year, those Krishna expansions were going home with Krishna every day, going out to the forest every day, going back home. So even Lord Balaram, who was in direct expansion of Krishna, he was struck with wonder and how he was feeling such attraction for these cowherd boys and cows, because they were all Krishna. And Krishna is the basic component of attraction for Krishna. So Lord Balaram has felt his attraction for these cowherd boys and cows increase because he was dealing directly with Krishna. So similarly, we have to concentrate on Krishna if we want our feelings for Krishna to increase. We all experience that. If you meet somebody and you think there's chance of a relationship, then you have to concentrate on that person. You're not going to increase your feelings for this person if you're concentrating on somebody else. It's not going to happen. So it's just common sense. If we want to increase our love for Krishna, then we have to concentrate on Krishna. Can't concentrate elsewhere. It's not going to happen. So Krishna is the basic component of vibhav, and the impelling component or force is the pure devotee, ideally again, the spiritual master, the guru. So similarly, we have to concentrate on guru. Why accept the spiritual master? Like Prabhupada used to say this over and over again. Don't accept the spiritual master as a fashion. Oh, my friend has a guru. This person has a guru. I have to get a guru too. No, not like that. Tadvijnanartham sagurum eva abhigacchat. For one who wants to know the transcendental science of how to get out of this forest fire of the material world, for such a person, then eva abhigacchat. The having a spiritual master is a necessity. There's no other way you can get out without having a qualified spiritual master. So such personalities should have a guru. Don't keep a guru as a fashion. Everybody else is getting a guru. I need a guru too. No, not like that. And then, like Hiranyakashipu was trying to do here, Lord Brahma is in essence his guru. He's performing these austerities for 100 celestial years, disturbing the demigods, disturbing the entire cosmos. Lord Brahma comes, sprinkles water from his kamandalu, brings him back to full vigor. And now he says, I can give you benediction as far as I'm able to. Please ask what you want. And what he's going to ask for is ultimately to take over Lord Brahma's position. He wants to be the top gun in the universe. So that's not how a disciple should approach a spiritual master. Certainly not in the bhakti tradition. One does not approach the guru to take the guru's position. This is Mayavad, Prabhupada said many times. The Mayavadis, they take a guru and they use the guru like a ladder to climb up to the point of liberation. At least they think they're liberated. Because of their impure intelligence, they consider themselves to be liberated. And then when you get to that point, just like when you use a ladder to get somewhere, you don't need a ladder anymore, you can kick it away. So the Mayavadi approach to the guru is like that. You climb the guru like a ladder, and when you're up there, then you kick the guru away, you don't need him anymore. Then you declare yourself to be the big Swami this and Swami that. Swami beyond Ananda. So bhakti process is not like that. Not that we climb the guru, and then when we get to great heights, then we don't need the guru anymore. No. Eternally. We're chanting every day. The lotus feet of the spiritual master are the only way by which you can attain pure devotional service. The only way. And so if we accept that, and we try to propitiate to satisfy the spiritual master, then there's no question of kicking the spiritual master away, of usurping the spiritual master's position. That is not the bhakti process. So Hiranyakashipu is setting an example here of what not to do. He's performing great austerities for the wrong reason. He's approaching guru in the wrong mentality. So we learn. You learn two ways, positive and negative. You always learn what to do and what not to do. So we're learning from Hiranyakashipu what not to do, what mentality not to have. And yes, again, it's wonderful that he could stand on his tippy toes and maintain his life here within the bones, but we're not a bone-worshipping society. Sariputta, I think, is the one who coined that phrase, that these scientists nowadays are just, you know, worshipping stones and bones. Somebody discovers some bone somewhere, it's like, ooh, ah, it's all over the internet, it's all over the news. Oh, they found these bones. Oh, what do these bones tell us about these people? Stones and bones worshippers. We don't want to worship stones and bones. We want to worship Krishna. Krishna is our impetus for getting out of here, not stones and bones. Everybody's got bones. You know, you've got bones, I've got bones. So who cares about somebody's bones from 5,000 years ago? Who cares? Or 500,000 years ago? Who cares? But they do. You know, they've discovered some bones and, oh, these bones must be like 2.3 million years old. Ooh. Who cares? And similarly, stones, you know, they worship these stones. They examine them and, oh, they must have been so advanced. They flaked off the chips just right so they could use the stone as a cutting tool. Ooh. Who cares? We, at least those of us who have already started on this path, should really apply ourselves to the science of bhakti. That's what we're here for. To apply ourselves to the science of bhakti for our own benefit. And then anybody that we come in contact with will be benefited. Anybody that we come in contact with. Because this is what they're actually ultimately looking for. Stones and bones don't satisfy. And when you take to the path of spirituality, unclear presentation of spirituality also doesn't satisfy. So the bhakti process is so satisfying because everything is completely clear. And even if one says, well, I'm not a scholar, I can't remember the difference between vibhav and anubhav and sthayibhav and... Doesn't matter. Can you remember Hare Krishna and Rama? Just chant Hare Krishna sincerely. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. Follow the instructions of the spiritual master. And just by those two things, by following strictly the instructions of the spiritual master and by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, you will be liberated. You'll definitely get out of here. It's not that, you know, sometimes some devotees that lament that, you know, such and such devotees, oh, when he sits down, the verses just flow and just recites so many shlokas, and I can't do that. No, it's not that everybody has the same aptitude in any regard. Not everybody can build a Rath Yatra cart from scratch like Ratnabhushan. Does that mean that your life is a failure? So not everybody can, you know, just roll off the shlokas like machine gun. That won't necessarily get you out of here. I've told the story many times, but it's very, very instructive. About when I was in Laguna Beach distributing books at a table, and this Indian man came up and said, I know the entire Bhagavad Gita. So I know quite a bit of Bhagavad Gita, so I tested him. And sure enough, the guy knew. Whatever chapter you went to, whatever verse you came up with, he knew it. So I was impressed. And then he said, now I'm going to learn all 18,000 shlokas of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the elder Mahavishnu was still alive at that point. He was there. You know him, very, very sharp wit. So I went up to him and I said, you know, I see that guy, he knows the entire Bhagavad Gita, now he's going to learn the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So Maharaj looked him over, head to toe, and he said, I don't see any bead bag. Where's the bead bag? In other words, Even if you know every shloka that's ever been written, if you don't approach Krishna in the right mentality, it's practically useless. Krishna himself says that to Uddhava in the 11th canto. He says, Shabda Brahmani Nishnato Nanishyayat Parayadi Shamastasya Shamapala Hyadeinum Iva Rakshata. He says, Shabda Brahmani Nishnato. If you study all the Vedas, you know the entire Vedic thing. Nanishyayat Parayadi, but you're not using that knowledge to approach Para, the Supreme, then Shamastasya Shamapala. It's useless labor and it will bear no fruit. Hyadeinum, Deinu means cow. Just like we know Kamadenu, wish fulfilling cow. He adenum means not a cow. So what is not a cow? Technically, when a cow is not giving milk, then is it really a cow? So Krishna says, he certainly adenum eva rakshata. It's just like very nicely keeping a cow who's not giving any milk. So if you study the Vedas, you know every shloka in the creation, but you're not using it for the right purpose, then it's just like keeping a cow that's not giving any milk. You're not going to get any benefit out of it. So don't lament if you don't necessarily have the aptitude and we should to our best ability study these books and try to remember them. But the main thing to remember is that Krishna is God, I'm not. Krishna is God, I'm his servant eternally. And the way to permanently realize that is to seriously take to this path of bhakti, chant Hare Krishna sincerely, associate with the devotees nicely, hear Srimad Bhagavatam every day, worship the deities. All the different processes are there just to bring us back to sanity, to normalcy. Because Prabhupada used to say that even though there are unlimited souls in the material world, there's still just a tiny fragment. The majority of souls are in the spiritual world, perfected beings. So we are the insane ones, they're the sane ones. And this bhakti process will bring us back to the point of sanity where we stop chasing after will-o'-the-wisp, stop chasing after shadows, stop chasing after things that we know from experience are not going to bring us the satisfaction that we want. We've been, since time immemorial, trying to associate with and have relationship with Krishna's parts and parcels instead of Krishna himself. But what can any part and parcel give us, even materially speaking? You know, anybody on this planet, the very first thing that we all need is they have to eat. And nobody here can guarantee anybody else food. No matter how much money you have, you cannot guarantee somebody food. Food is not grown in Bank of America. You know, even if you have all the money in the Bank of America, you can't guarantee yourself that you're going to eat. Food is directly given by Krishna, by God. And the material energy has the power to withhold, as we know in the story with Prithu Maharaj. When the population is too much demoniac, then Mother Earth withdraws. First of all, it withdraws the potency. It's stated in Kali Yuga, the herbs, the fruits, the vegetables, they don't have the potency that they used to have formerly. And therefore, even though people eat, and they eat, and they eat, they still don't feel satisfaction, they don't get nourished, because the potency has been withdrawn. And then gradually, as Kali Yuga progresses, the food itself will be withdrawn. All vegetation will be withdrawn. And vegetation, as you know, is the basis of everybody's food. Even if you're a meat eater, the animals have to eat vegetation and then you eat them. So gradually all the vegetation will be withdrawn and people will start not only eating animals, they'll eat their own offspring. So this is what's coming in Kali Yuga. We're only 5,000 plus years into it. It's got 427,000 years more to go. So Prabhupada used to say, get serious. Get serious. Stop chasing after shadows. Get serious about this bhakti science. Get out of here. Go back to home, back to Godhead. Any questions, comments? Kumudini Prabhu, yes, what is your question? Waiting for the mic. Here. Bali, meet Kumi.
Haribol. Haribol, Akshita Prabhu, thank you for a nice class.
Hare Krishna.
I appreciated your analogy at the beginning of the class about frogs going into samadhi. It's my understanding that what is so precious and rare and distinct about taking birth in human body is that we have an ability to develop our Krishna consciousness. We have an ability to connect and go home back to Godhead. But with all other species on earth, that is not possible. Is that the proper understanding?
Not that it's not possible. We just heard yesterday when Prem Sankirtan was reading the pastime of Shivananda Sen that he used to take care of all the devotees going to Jagannath Puri, and one year he just befriended a dog, or the dog befriended him. And so he was taking care of this dog. And then the dog disappeared, and he sent 200 men to search for the dog, and then when they got to Puri, lo and behold, that dog had gotten the association of Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya was feeding the dog pulp, coconut pulp that he'd chewed. He was throwing it to the dog, and the dog ate, and the dog went back to Godhead. So one can go back to Godhead from any species of life. Lord Chaitanya also embraced some trees, and they went back directly to Godhead. But human beings have the developed intelligence to understand, first of all, the necessity. I mean, the animals feel comfortable. They're, you know, no matter what's happening, they try to adjust, and they're never thinking about, why am I suffering like this? Why don't I just make a plan to get out permanently? They don't think like that. They just try to adjust the material situation by running away or being aggressive or whatever. They do something to try to adjust their material situation, trying to become comfortable and happy that way. Human beings, though, have developed intelligence that we can see beyond the immediate, that no matter how much I adjust the material energy, I have enough money and I have this and I have that, still I'm not happy. Still I'm going to have to die. Still I'm going to have to take birth again. And we have the ability to see that, to see beyond the horizon, so to speak, where animals don't have that.
Animal samadhi is concentration, meditation, and then samadhi. So animals don't have an ability to actually concentrate the mind and focus on one.
Not on spiritual subjects. They can concentrate like anything, though. They've done studies, for instance, with cats, where normally the cat's auditory system is so fine that if any little sound you make, their nerves react to it, sounds that we can't hear. But when they concentrate on a mouse, fully concentrated, you make that sound and their nerves don't react at all. They're so concentrated. So they have the ability to concentrate. Again, they're just concentrating on the material energy. They're not concentrating on anything spiritual. Whereas a human being has the ability to do that, to concentrate on something beyond matter, to appreciate, first of all, the existence of something beyond matter, and to concentrate on that. That's our unique. Otherwise, if we simply use our intelligence materially, we just create problems. We see that. We create problems for ourselves and for the animals. When you think of it, I've stated in the previous class, and this is a fact, when the British went to India in the 1800s, the place was literally crawling with tigers and lions and elephants, and so much wildlife was there. But some or other, the natives were living peacefully with them. They were coexisting. And then the British came, and within less than 100 years, 95% of all that wildlife was gone. All the tigers, hippos, elephants, they just killed them, slaughtered them. That's misuse of higher intelligence. What are we compared to a tiger or a rhino or an elephant? We're insignificant. An elephant with one swipe of its trunk can kill you. But some or other, we kill them. We wipe them out like anything. That's misuse of higher intelligence. So the higher intelligence of the human being is meant to see beyond matter, to see that there is a spiritual realm, and to take to a process or a path that will take us to that spiritual realm. Okay? Yes? Haribo.
Thank you, Prabhu, for your continued efforts to lead us to lives of bhakti. I have a question regarding motivation, particularly my motivations. Coming to Krishna consciousness, I understand the goal of being motivated only by bhakti and pure love of God, that whatever service I may do, that's my only motivation. But I also have to be honest that in many of these beginning stages, I find that relief of symptoms of the distresses of this material world and Maya, which has brought me to Krishna's consciousness, the pain, the realizing that the satisfaction was not there and all I felt was misery, that this motivation and desire for relief of symptoms is also a motivator for me. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, do I need an attitude adjustment? Is that a wrong place to come from?
Very good question, Bhakti and Peggy. That's dealt with in the Shastra, that of course, coming out of material consciousness is a gradual thing. But it's recommended akama, sarva kamova, moksha kamo dharati, Tibrena, Bhakti Yogena, Yajeta, Purusha Param. That wherever you are, akama means no desire. Sarvakama means all desire. Like I mentioned in the beginning of the class, there are many people who believe in the Vedic paradigm, but they try to use it. They worship Lakshmi so that Lakshmi can give them money that they can enjoy materially. So that's approaching things, but at least they're participating in the worship process. They're acknowledging that there's a higher power and trying to make some connection there. Hiranyakashipu himself also recognizes there's higher power, but he's trying to use it. So when we take to the bhakti process, we are not immediately pure, obviously, and we have to be honest. This is where I am. You know, I recognize that there's something here. Maybe Krishna is God, and maybe this is the right path. But right now, you know, I have this desire, that desire. And when one comes in contact with a proper guide, then a proper guide can very expertly lead you so you can gradually rise out of the stage of sarvakama and come to the stage of akama. No desire except to fulfill Krishna's desires. But yeah, it's not that you walk through the door, you chant Hare Krishna once, and immediately all your desires go away and you become a pure devotee. It would be wonderful if that's the way it worked, but it's a science that one has to apply one's intelligence and energy to, just like anything else. And discipline, as I said earlier, discipline is required. In any field, think of athletes, think of businessmen. If you're not a disciplined business person, if you're not a disciplined athlete, you're not going to get very far. But some or other people think when they come to the realm of spirituality, they don't have to be disciplined. They can just do whatever they want. And no. Any endeavor in this world, you have to apply in a very conscientious, very concentrated, and a very disciplined way if you want to achieve the goal. So if you want to achieve the goal of bhakti, you have to accept discipline. And that's what the spiritual master is meant to do, first and foremost, to impose discipline on you so that your energies, instead of being splayed all out, can be channeled gradually just into pleasing Krishna. And as soon as Krishna is pleased, as soon as we please Krishna, by pleasing his representative, then immediately we start to feel, you know, less and less desire for material situation. Okay, we're almost at 8:30. I think whatever else we have, we should take it outside. Grazie Rashim and Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.